Joshua Funder joined us on Tuesday with a really moving story about the conversations he shared as a little boy with his great-grandfather. And you might recall it all became inspiration for a novel he's written, Watson's Pier. And in response, some of you have been sharing your own family's Gallipoli conversations.
Hello, I'm Sylvia. My granddad, Arthur, was injured at Gallipoli because he was buried in a trench. He had to have one of his kidneys removed. He died aged 92 in 1980 when I was 18 years old. He never told me anything about Gallipoli, but he warned, never glorify war. Arthur originated from a conservative family, so upper-class Sydney that his German grandfather, Dr. Karl Eichler, once had Prince Alfred visit his house for a garden party in 1865. Gallipoli and Egypt changed Arthur's politics drastically. He was disgusted with the way that the British officers treated working-class people.
Thank you, Sylvia. So that's the sort of conversation that she shared with her granddad Arthur about war and its legacy. And it's those difficult conversations with kids about war that we're talking about first up today. What message do you want to impart to them?
Mum and Dad and Denny saw the passing out parade at Puckapunyal with a long march from cadets. The 6th Battalion was the next to turn. It was me who drew the card. We did Canungra, Shoalwater before we left. And Townsville lined the footpaths as we marched down to the quay. This clipping from the paper shows us young and strong and clean. And there's me in me slouch hat with me SLR and greens. God help me. I was only 19.
Yes. Red Gum, I Was Only 19. It was a soundtrack to my childhood, that song. It still gives me the shivers. You know, children ask disarmingly frank questions, and I wonder if you've been having interesting conversations in your household about war during this Anzac centenary, or whether you're from a generation where war left a big imprint, but that wasn't discussed openly. Perhaps you were a child who had a father or grandmother who served, and everything was shushed up afterwards. Just as war brings us together at times like this, it also divides, it hurts, it kills, and it can leave a really long legacy inside families who suffer that loss. There's the Legacy Organisation. They provide support to over 90,000 widows in Australia and their children. But for all the assistance provided by groups like this, many parents really despair over how to help their children cope. When a parent is serving in the Defence Force, mum might be deployed in Afghanistan right now for 10 months at a time, or a granddad may have been killed in Vietnam. We're wondering if we've made any progress since wars of the past, or do children's voices and concerns continue to be lost in the fog of war? And we'd like to hear from you this morning. Get on the phones. What sorts of conversations are you having with your children about war? Were you that child? Your parent, your grandparent went to war. They may never have returned. What questions did you ask? Did you get the answers you were looking for? Or if you're a partner are serving in the Defence Force right now, how do you talk to your children about it? Give us a call this morning, 1300 225 76. That's 1300. Call RN. You can SMS us to 0418 226 576. You can tweet us, if you can try and condense it into 140 characters. Good luck with that. That's at RN Life Matters, our Twitter name, at RN Life Matters. But that number again, 1300 225 576. And if you're in WA, Northern Territory, South Australia, there's our listener line, 0283 1430, talking to your kids about war. Now, Liam's Story is a new children's book which originated from one family's distress about war and a research project that grew out of that. And it tells the story of a little boy, a little red-headed boy, who's lost his dad at war in Afghanistan, and he asks his mum a tricky question as they ready themselves for the Anzac March. And two of the writers join us from the University of New England this morning. Marge Baber is an early childhood lecturer. She researches the inclusion of children in conversations about war. Good morning to you, Marge.
Hi.
And Kim Porter, is a lecturer in social science teaching in primary education in particular. Kim, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Kim, what is the question that little Liam, little red-headed Liam, asks his mum on the day of the Anzac March?
The question that he asked was, so why do I wear Dad's medals? And that was one of the focuses, or one of the main focuses that we had in writing this book, was to write an answer to that question for Liam.
Because everyone's telling him he should be so proud.
That's exactly right. And, you know, being as young as Liam is, we were trying to explain to him that it's, you know, more than just being proud. You know, he can't see past the loss of his dad and wants his dad in his life, like all of the other little boys that he sees around him.
How old is Liam?
I think
at the time of writing the book, he was 5. He's older than that now.
Mm. So this all is part of a bigger project, now a whole new book series for little kids. Kim, tell us about the trigger for this project.
Well, the trigger for this project, it was actually twofold. Firstly, the other author, Madeline Fussell, was contacted by Liam's mother and wanted some help and assistance, because she's a family friend, in answering the question that Liam had posed to her. She wanted a much better answer than, you know, just to say Daddy died. And, of course, there is a much richer answer than that that can be told. And the other factor that prompted this book to be written was Madeline and I went into schools last year teaching from the new history curriculum and in primary schools, and we got some resources from the War Memorial. They have memorial boxes that you can get from them that give you quite rich resources to be able to teach the Anzac story.
So what's changed in the curriculum?
Well, not a great deal, but what we found was that, you know, Anzac Day is still being taught as a commemoration in primary school. But what we found, there were no child-based resources where we could introduce the story. So that was another reason why we decided to write this story the way that we have.
Mm. Marge Baber, what really struck you about the mother at the heart of this story and what she was struggling with?
I guess one of the big themes that came through with her was the use of narrative. She's showing great resilience as she brings up Liam by herself, and she's trying to deal with his questions as he poses them in line with his development. But I guess one of the big things that, to me, I was struck with was the narrative, and a lot of those narratives have come through the Defence Force and the Defence Force culture, and they're narratives that have come through in the larger research that I'm doing, which is young children's understandings and experiences of deployment within an ADF family. And those narratives are used to a large extent with the children, so that they have an answer when adults and educators, when friends and other family members ask them, you know, where's Dad or where's Mum or when are they coming home? They've got this little narrative, which is often 2 or 3 sentences.
Can you give us an example to give us a feeling for what the military encourage people to say to children about what's happening to Mum and Dad, or what's happened to Mum and Dad if they haven't returned?
If they haven't returned, I think it's more about going into the sacrifice, and that they were protecting our country and they were serving their country. But I think for most of the research, we've only got one family where there was someone who had passed away. The majority of the research is with families where someone is still overseas, or they've just been overseas on deployment. But the narratives may go something like this. Daddy's in Afghanistan. Daddy went away on a plane. Only army men can go there, or only army people can go there. I can't go there. Daddy will come home on the plane. So it's usually around that area. And when I started the research, it was, certainly wasn't something I was expecting to find. But these narratives are really powerful, and the educators that work with the children and the parents encourage that, and they help them to memorise it. And usually before the family experiences a deployment, they go over and over the narrative with the child. At the time, I was sort of a bit frustrated with the narrative because I wanted to delve into the children's understandings, but then I realised that this was their security.
There seemed to be a very limited narrative, don't they? And I guess the question is, do kids have questions outside of that prescribed explanation for what's happening to their parents who might be serving in a war or a conflict or a peacekeeping situation?
Yes, they are very prescribed. I'll say two things to that. I also worked with a child who didn't have a narrative. Her father had deployed very quickly, was given 10 days notice. She was totally lost. There was no narrative. And so when educators and when other people asked her about her father, she just put her head down and had nothing to say. We worked with her and we developed some sort of narrative. And by the end of the research, she was really a much different child because she had that one there.
Because kids respond to stories.
They do, absolutely.
It helps them make sense of the world.
Yeah, we all do.
Well, go on.
The other thing is that, of course, they ask more questions. And I think with Liam's story, that question comes through. You know, he wants to know more. The mother had a narrative, and Liam was happy with that narrative for a time, but children outgrow those narratives and they want to know more. And this is part of the story.
Yeah, they sure do. With us this morning is Marg Baber. She's a lecturer in early childhood at University of New England, and Kim Porter, a lecturer in social sciences, also at the same university, co-author of Liam's Story, a new little book, which is really about responding to kids' questions about war. And perhaps you've had conversations right now in response to the Anzac commemorations with your children about war, what it means, how you make sense of it. Perhaps you remember those conversations being silenced in previous generations. We'd like to hear from you this morning. 1300 22 55 76 1300 call RN. What conversations have you had with your children about war? Margaret in Melbourne, you had a father in the 39th Battalion? Hello,
yeah.
Hi, Margaret.
Hello.
Have I got you? Yeah, hi.
Hi. Yes, my father was one of the chocolate soldiers in the 39th Battalion, and he fought on the Kokoda Trail in Papua New Guinea, and he was one of the 500 soldiers that fought there, and he got malaria and was sent to the repatriation hospital in Heidelberg.
Yes.
And was told that he would only have about 3 months to live. And he went off and had 10 children, and I'm one of the 10 children. And before he died, maybe a year before he died, I said to him, "Dad, you've never spoken to anybody about your wartime experience." And he looked at me, and he was a Catholic, and he said, "Margaret, how would you feel if you had to watch your mates be killed and if you had to kill people?" And I just knew I couldn't say anything else to him. And I still remember that conversation till this day.
He'd kept it bottled up.
He did. And my brothers tried to talk to him about it too, and he said, "I can't talk about it."
Do you think not talking about it revealed itself in other ways for your father?
Look, he was the president of one of the RSLs, and that's how he really, you know, sort of gave back. But I think because, you know, he just was so affected by the experience, he couldn't talk about it. And none of his mates talked about it. So when he went to the RSL, all they did was have their beer and, you know, talked about everything else except their wartime experiences.
But perhaps just sitting in the company of each other, that says so much in itself, doesn't it?
Definitely. Mm. Yeah.
Margaret, thank you so much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. David in Sydney, a great uncle.
Yes, hi. I was lucky to, when I was about 10, got to have a conversation with my great-uncle Stan, who had been at the Battle of the Somme.
Mm.
And, you know, they were from the Taree area, and he later came back and became, I think, headmaster up at Lismore. Anyway, I think he was not surprised that I wanted to, you know, I asked him, I said, what was it like? You know, I think he was a bit surprised.
Which is a big question to ask, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think he was really like, oh, well, you know, he wants to know. And, you know, one thing that, and he said, look, you know, he said, we never thought we'd see the Manning again.
Yeah.
You know, we never thought we'd see the Manning again. And just that, you know, really stayed with me because it says it all. And, you know, that's a really emotional feeling to... there's a family story we have. I'll just be really quick.
Please.
But basically, my great-uncle... My great-grandfather had three of his oldest boys, and they were all at the Somme, and he was worried, and he was out ploughing in the field, and he was overcome. He fell down. This is the family story.
Mm.
He heard the voice of the Lord say to him, don't worry, just as I delivered the men from the fires of Israel, you know, your sons will be returned to you. And from that day on, he was the pillar of calm for everyone. He had that faith, and all three boys returned, and Stan was the oldest. So that's a sort of family story.
But I wonder what impact sort of as a child sharing these stories has had had on you, knowing these stories, asking these questions.
Yeah. Well, a few things. Firstly, like I think when I saw the art of the German artist Otto Dix, his war cycle at the National Gallery, and that really brought, I mean, that's more horrific than any photo. And so seeing, and he was at the Somme too, you know, where, I don't know, 500,000 men were lost in a couple of weeks or something. And seeing those drawings, and I think, what you know, it's really mixed, because if that was the war to end all wars, you know, I actually think that maybe we quite like war. We keep on going and doing it. You know, we sign up. We, you know, I was at the No War March in 2002. We're like, don't have war and the consequences, and we just do it.
David,
so
thank
hard.
You. Thank you. It is hard. It is hard, yeah. And there's a real fine line there in terms of the conversations you have with your kids. David, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Thanks for honouring your great-uncle and your great-grandfather. Let me come back to my guests, because Kim and Marg, I guess, you know, how much information do you give? You know, people are anxious about glorifying war. How much do you give to your how much do you glorify war with your kids?
Well, I think you try not to. I think this book, for us, we were really careful to show that war affects many, many people. And in the book it talks about the fact that Liam's father was a soldier, but he was much more than that. He was, you know, a father, he was a husband, he was somebody's son, and he was people's friends. And so that war, you know, has had a great effect on this family, but also on many Australian families. I think if you give too much detail, it's traumatic for them, and therefore the war keeps traumatising people that it wasn't supposed to. Touch at all, you know, with civilians. But I think if you ignore it, I think sometimes that leads the children into finding out of somebody else and finding out things perhaps that they weren't ready to know.
Have we got better at those conversations now compared to previous generations?
I think when Kim and Madeline were looking at the resources available in schools, they found that definitely there was some great stuff out there for high school, but there was a real lack in that primary school and right down to preschool times, because I think a lot of people are scared to go there, and they're scared of how to do something in a sensitive way. So that's why we have tried our best to reach a wide-ranging audience for 4 to 12-year-olds.
Mm, we've had an interesting text message from Vanessa. Are they making resources for kids who have fled war too, like refugee children, or perhaps children of Australian Defence Forces can meet those who fled war and share experiences? Let's come to Sid in Queensland. Your grandfather was in Gallipoli, Sid.
Yeah, he was in the war, and also my father fought in New Guinea. But as I said to you previously, they didn't keep reliving it because that's what they actually fought for, you know, to be able to live their life and get on with their life. Mm. And, you know, I just think, I think that was a great way of going about it. My uncle was the president of our local RSL club for many, many, many years, tireless work, and always used to say to my dad, you know, come to the dawn service and so forth. And my dad used to say the same thing all the time. I don't need to go and do that to remember my mates. I remember them every day. Neither of those men talked about war. Their feelings were, you know, there shouldn't be any, obviously, and the atrocities they saw. My father didn't speak 20 words about the war, I don't think, in the time that he was alive. And I found out more of what he went through from a fellow that was there and you know, sort of not in the same brigade and what have you, but a different regiment.
Who wanted to talk?
He was. I actually said to him when I was about 14 or 15, I said, "Merv, why, he said something about the war, and I said, "Well, my dad doesn't say anything bad." He said, "Oh, he went through some pretty bad stuff, and I can understand that, what have you." And this man that was saying that, you know, my dad went through bad stuff, sometime later I visited him on a Sunday morning. I went into his house and his wife and his two sons were having bacon and eggs. And I went through the kitchen to the back. I said, "Where's Merv?" And I went through the kitchen to the back door and yelled, "Hey, Merv, you know, you better get up here. They're eating all your bacon and eggs." And his wife rushed over and grabbed me by the arm and sort of pulled me away from the door and looked to see if Merv heard me. And she said, no. I said, "Well, come out here. I'll just..." Sorry about that car noise.
That's all right. What happened?
She pulled me to the side and said, no, when we want to have bacon and eggs, we tell Merv, he goes and does his thing in the yard while we have it, because he couldn't ever, after being in New Guinea and seeing what happened to bodies up there, shall we say, with animals.
He couldn't eat bacon again.
He couldn't eat bacon, pork or anything ever again.
Did hearing Merv's stories make sense of some things about your father?
He didn't really tell me stories. That was just a comment that he just said that, you know,
okay.
Your dad doesn't want to talk about that and that's fine sort of thing. And I don't want him to talk about it either in some ways. If he wanted to, fine, but of course he's long past now.
Okay.
He passed away about 10 years ago. But I just think, I won't keep it too long, but I just think that when the call was for kids to not have sports and that, on Saturday, I think that's going totally against what those wars were fought for, because the freedom for them to go and have sport and to cherish what they have and
on Anzac Day
and all the enjoyment that to me and the all other right. thing that I'd say is,
Sid, I'm going to have to let you go. I'm sorry, we've got a full board.
It shouldn't be the great war. There's no war that's great.
Thank you for the call, Sid, and sharing the story about your grandfather and your father very much. Marilyn in North Queensland, you had a father who was a prisoner of war in Changi.
Yes, that's right. Yes, and he was on the Thai Burma Railway. He survived that. My mother was also a war nurse, and she was on the first hospital ship into Singapore, Australian one. So that's where they met. I was born after the war, some 6 years later in 1951. One of the things that was strange that I've only realised as an adult was that my father would have flashbacks. The first one I remembered, I was 3 or 4 years old, and coming from Tully, North Queensland, Dad had a small cane farm, which he'd bought with his Changi back pay. He and his mates used to go out fishing, and so he was gutting a fish in the laundry and showing me how to do that. And then all of a sudden, he's talking about Japanese water torture.
Oh, goodness me.
And this story went right on. I just listened. And then it stopped, and he got back on with cleaning the fish. And
how did that affect you as you were growing up?
Well, it was strange. I have memories of sitting in class and learning social studies and learning about different places and knowing that my father was in the, had been there, and wondering what had happened to him, really. I mean, he was a very, very heavy drinker. He was never violent with us, but he certainly was a very heavy drinker. It was also, he had huge issues around food. And so food was always a big drama in our household. And it was only, the other flashbacks happened at times. I got told about various people that had been shot, a sniper that he'd shot before they were captured, various other things that he told me about. And then it was like, it was definitely a flashback. It was only after seeing the films on Changi that I,
it
and
made
reading
sense
the
to
books,
you.
That I knew I'd be, I knew this.
Okay. Marilyn, thank you so much for the call and sharing that experience. Let me come back to my guests, Marg Baber and Kim Porter, both from the University of New England. They've both been involved in a book, Liam's Story, So Why Do I Wear Dad's Medals? Particularly, it's about supporting children who have parents in service in the military or the defence forces today. We're hearing these stories, Marg and Kim, and it really does say a lot, doesn't it, that how we talk about war to children affects them well into their adult lives.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, we've got to start having these conversations with children because, you know, they're exposed to it, they hear it, you know, war and conflict comes into their living rooms, you know, through the news. And if we don't have the conversations, as Mark said, then, you know, that can affect them as well.
I'm just wondering then too, for families today, what has your research revealed about the impact of people coming back from war with the sort of scars or burden that they carry back into the household?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. It's a very difficult thing because we have a culture that I guess we think of a military family as fairly stoic and resilient, and often they are. But when you have something like high risk factors with repeat deployments or people in war zones, when they come back home, they are changed in some way, depending on what they're doing in the war zones. But it can be a very, very traumatic experience, and to come back and just slot back into their life as a civilian and also as a parent, that's a really difficult thing. Slotting back into their marriage when they've been absent for, you know, 9-10 months can be difficult. There's also a lot of peacekeeping missions and border protection where they're really exposed to very, very traumatic scenes, and they are then expected to come back in and get on with their lives. And I think there's also big issues about reporting that trauma, because it can mean for them that they're not put up for the next deployment or not trained to go on to the next level.
So families suffer in silence.
Absolutely.
The people returning from service suffer in silence. We've heard these stories to this program. They suffer in silence, their kids suffer in silence, and families break up sometimes.
Yeah, quite often. Yeah. It's a very, very difficult thing. And you've also got the parent who stayed at home and they've taken on new responsibilities and new skills. They've often experienced a lot of personal growth, but that personal growth has happened without the partner. And so when the parent returns from deployment to I guess relinquish some of those roles and to reinvent themselves as a family is a really difficult process, and they need a lot of support during that time. Many of them do it very well. But it is, it's a tough call.
Well, that's right. And so, Kim Porter, finally to you, this book, Liam's Stories, in fact, the first in a 12-part series, embracing a whole range of different themes that children will be asking about and wondering about in relation to war and a parent who might be serving in a conflict or a peacekeeping mission. So what role can storytelling have?
Well, as I said,
when people come home and trauma is there, it's present, it's hanging in the household.
Well, I think, you know, it allows a starting point, you know, through the pictures and the storyline, so that, you know, the parent perhaps that's affected can, you know, start the conversation with the child that way. So, you know, it provides a stimulus, I guess, where, you know, a conversation can sometimes be hard to start, but once it's started, then, you know, it's much easier to then be involved in with the children.
Yes, and I think children can have a unique role in helping open up their parents who might be struggling in silence or in private. Look, thank you both. We've got many more calls that we can't get to, and I really hope that people can ring our listener feedback line 0283 1430. We would love to hear your story, or you might like to email us from on the website abc.net.au/rn/lifematters. We'd really love to hear your stories in response to our conversation about talking to children about war and military service. Can I thank Marg Baber and Kim Porter? Thank you so much for joining us to give us a taste of Liam's story.
Thanks, Georgia.
Thank you.
And Liam's story, So Why Do I Wear Dad's Medals? We'll put the details of the book. It's published by Paddy Mellon Press. It's all on the Life Matters website, where you can also post your stories or comments there too. Please do. We'd really love to hear from you. And sorry we couldn't get to your calls, Arthur, Patrick, Madonna and Hannah. Really sorry about that. They looked like you had very interesting things to say, to share with us today, talking to your children about war and the legacy of growing up with war veterans. I know that's a very, very powerful thread through my family, and the trauma is felt right down through the generations, right to Gen X.